Welcome to Write Now with Scrivener, where writers talk about how they work, how they develop their ideas, and how they use Scrivener, the app built for long-form writing projects. I'm your host, Kirk McElhern, author of Take Control of Scrivener. Today, I'm happy to welcome Veronica G. Henry. Veronica is an author of novels, and I was going to say a fantasy author, but you've also written mysteries and thrillers. You kind of touch different genres, don't you?
I absolutely do, and it's something that I enjoy. I set out for, you know, with this career, thinking that I would write what I like to call speculative fiction, which kind of encompasses a wide range of fiction about the fantastical, you know, things that are a little outside of your everyday life. And as I started writing more novels and short stories, other ideas started coming to me, and I had a choice to make. So that choice for a writer is, do I establish a career writing one thing for a very long period of time and then branch out? Or do you kind of buck the trend and write what you want? And I talked it over with my agent and even my editor at the time, because I felt strongly about, you know, the stories that I wanted to write. And they're like, go for it. And so I did. And it's not something that I regret. It is a risk because there's like my first novel was a historical fantasy, Bacchanal.
Right.
And then the second was two books in sort of the mystery speculative space. And there was no guarantee that those readers were going to make that jump. It's a huge jump. But in the end, I had to have confidence that readers like good stories. So I wrote the story that I wanted to write. I love that story. I still get emails about them, and they're like, people like, when's the next one coming out? So overall, I think it was a good decision.
It's not, well, I was going to say it's not that uncommon. There are some big names who do this. Stephen King, for instance, he touches a whole bunch of subgenres in the speculative fiction area.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess in publishing today, where an author has to develop a familiar career with fantasy, it's often a trilogy or a series. Mysteries, it's often a series. And veering off, as you say, you don't know if the readers are going to follow. When you meet readers, do you meet a lot of people who've read your different novels or have only just discovered the one style?
That's the fascinating part of it, Kirk. I have met people who have read each and every novel. And consistently what I hear from those people is, I wouldn't have read this kind of book if, you know, if I wasn't comfortable with the author already and felt like I could take that risk and do something different. So I am finding that people, my hypothesis proved correct. And it's that people want a good story. And if you tell a good story and they're comfortable and they're confident in your ability to tell that story, they'll follow you. Sylvia Moreno-Garcia is another one. She kind of writes across the board, kind of jumps all over the place, turns out a book a year. They're all magnificent. So I think readers today are much more accepting of this than I think they would have been, say, even 10 years ago.
So if you had these different ideas, what convinced you to first write Bacchanal, which was a fantasy novel, and not something else? Were you juggling different ideas and trying to decide the one that you wanted to write most? Or was that the one that you just, was that the style you just wanted to write first?
That's actually, Bacchanal wasn't even my first novel. The first novel that I wrote was a sci-fi novel that no one will ever see, thank goodness. But, you know, it's like the training wheels. That's what writers have to do. You got to pound out some words to figure out how badly you suck, and then you work on it, right? So that was my first idea. Bacchanal kind of came to me because I'm a huge Ray Bradbury fan. And I reread Something Wicked, This Way Comes. I haven't reread it in a while, but there was a time where I kind of reread that book every couple years or so. And after I read it that last time and put it down, I remember this so distinctly. I was living in Las Vegas at the time. And I put the book down. I was out on the patio, and I had that quintessential author question. What if? And that question was, what if this was told from my perspective? And the perspective of perhaps someone in my family, because I'm in South Carolina, because that's where my family is from, my mom's family. And it was kind of just time to come home. But that what if question about, you know, what that story would look like told from a perspective set in the South, a perspective from someone that was Black, African-American, I thought this could be interesting. Now, of course, the story that I told ended up being nothing like Something Wicked This Way Comes. But at the same time, it just kind of served as that spearhead of the idea to say, okay, I could take this in a different direction. So that one was years, frankly, in development. I wrote it and then I set it aside because I was not yet skilled enough at that point to tell the story that I wanted to tell. And somehow I was able to recognize that because a lot of people can't. I set it aside and then I wrote something else that also will never be seen. But I came back to it because that story kept calling to me, the characters. So I came back to it and I did another draft. And then there was a mentorship program. It was called We Write in the Margins. And one of my favorite authors, Mary Robinette Kowal, who was on your show not too long ago,
yep,
was participating that year. And I was lucky enough to land her as my mentor. So we went through that book together. She gave me some outstanding notes and advice, and I reworked the novel. And after that, and I also worked with another author, her name is Kate Marshall, on that. And after working through that mentorship program, that is the book that landed me my agent. Now, I had a crap ton of work to do on it still after that, but it was Ray Bradbury and those two other authors stepping up to mentor that helped me make it.
How long did this all take from when you started writing until you got that first novel, till you got the agent? Because you're talking a year or two before it's actually published after that.
Yeah, it probably took, I want to say 5 or 6 years.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad, especially for someone, you know, I was always a reader, but I was never a writer. I came to writing much later. I started my career, as you know, in IT, and that's what I did. That's what I always wanted to do. I put my hands on my first keyboard. It was a Radio Shack TRS-80.
Yep, me too.
In my math class. Yep. And my teacher at the time showed us how to program in BASIC. I was done after that. I knew what I was going to do with the rest of my life. So that's what I thought I was going to do. But it was my husband that says, you know what? You write so well and you read all these books. Why don't you write your own? And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I don't have 100,000 words in me. I don't know what you're talking about. But luckily, he persisted and he didn't give up on me. And I wrote that first book. But I think having read so much and then having, again, set it aside, did those couple test novels, I think it just kind of helped.
So I'm a bit older than you. I grew up in the 70s reading Ray Bradbury and Robert Heinlein and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was very rare for there to be African-American authors of science fiction. Mm-hmm. This started a couple of decades ago. And do you feel that finally you're not considered to be that different, that there is a sort of African-American science fiction movement right now?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing. I didn't see a lot. It took a long while for me to even discover Sam Delaney and Octavia Butler, who were like our pioneers in the space. But I did the same thing as you. I read Herbert. I read Heinlein. I read Bradbury. I read all of those folks, and I read those books over and over again. But again, not discovering that there were people like me who did this much later kind of had an impact. But yes, I think we finally reached the point where I'm not such a unicorn. There were people that even came before me, you know, Nalo Hopkinson, N.K. Jemisin, other folks that even, you know, like before me, who were able to kind of make really strong inroads into this space, have made it so that it's not such an unusual thing anymore. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. We've got a long way to go, you know, in terms of equity, certainly. But I do feel like the opportunity is there where perhaps it hadn't been before.
Is there a style of African-American science fiction? Because I read a lot of science fiction, a lot of mysteries, and I recently read a novel by Walter Mosley, and it's a Walter Mosley style. Mm-hmm. Is there a similar style in fantasy and science fiction?
You know, that's the great thing is no. I think the answer is absolutely not. Because you mentioned Walter, who I've read. I love his mystery work. And again, he was one of those people who helped inspire me to write a mystery even. But I've read his mystery work and his speculative work. And then when you look at somebody like, you know, Jemisin again, and then you look at other people, look at Nalo Hopkinson. Those are all, and Nalo is an African-American, but she is from the African diaspora. All of those stories, all of their styles are completely different. And that's the beauty of it, is that we don't have one story. We've got like multiple stories. And we've got, different experiences, as different as anyone else's. And we can bring all of that into our fiction, bring all those experiences, you know, in the same country, in the same world, but from totally different places. And it just gives us such a variety. And yeah, I think it's just a good time to be writing.
Well, one thing about science fiction is it can be set anywhere. And your Bacchanal was set in Depression era South, and your two novels, A Quarter Storm and The Foreign Exchange, are set in New Orleans. But it could be on another planet in another universe with people or creatures who are totally different. So we kind of lose that element of looking at people from the color of their skin or the way that they look. And science fiction is gives much more latitude than other genres, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. It's one of those genres that makes it very clear that no matter where you are from, no matter what you look like, no matter your gender, our stories are actually really, really very similar. We all want the same things. We all struggle with the same things. We want love. We want a family. We want to be able to take care of ourselves. We want to be able to do work that matters to us. We have the same struggles with those same people, with family, you know, with work, with, you know, just existing, being a human, being in this planet. So there's so much more similar than there is different. But the beauty of it is the differences in our cultures allow us to express those same challenges and those same joys from a different perspective.
So your latest novel is The Canopy Keepers, and I don't know if this is an appropriate description. I would call it an ecological fantasy.
I think that's close. I would call it an ecological science fantasy.
Okay, because there is science, because it's more science than fantasy with wizards and all that.
Yes, absolutely. That novel is another one that came to me. I won't say that I'm a person that paid particularly close attention to the environment. Yes, I recycled. Yes, I had concern for the air and all of those things that you think about on a day-to-day basis. But it was a story that I read about the fires that happened in Sequoia National Park and the devastation to the giant sequoia trees. And the importance of it, which I just didn't know. And I thought, okay, if we keep doing this, we destroy these trees. We destroy the trees in the Amazon. We are really setting ourselves up for some trouble. So I thought about that, and it deeply, deeply impacted me. It was the pictures. It was the understanding of the science behind how they help us clean the air and the role they played for, you know, like forever. That impacted me and it stayed with me, and I could no longer turn away. And when that happens, I know the story is going to be close behind. So, I got the idea to write a story about nature and about, the environment, but kind of from the perspective of, nature being a little angry at us for what we're doing. We always see nature as this passive victim in, human, evolution. And I wanted to kind of spin that and say, okay, well, what if nature is taking notice and saying, you know what, I've had enough.
Well, you've been in South Carolina. You see nature getting angry with those hurricanes, don't you?
I absolutely do. I have seen it over the years, you know, visiting, coming back and forth. And I've also seen, because I'm part of the problem, I live in, I drive by and I live in a lovely development, but this development only happened because they mowed down a bunch of trees. And I find myself now driving past and I'll see the same thing happening. I'll see some logs, laying on the side of the road and red dirt churned up. And I'm like, oh, this is awful. You know, we can't do this. This is horrible. And then I think back, I'm like, oh, well, you kind of did the same thing. So it's one of those things that I can't turn off now, now that I've recognized, the impact, of human migration, of human, industrialization. And it's something that I had to write about. And yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about The Canopy Keepers and about how you work with Scrivener. Writing a book, screenplay, or even a long article is a juggling act. You need to find the right words and the right structure, keep track of research, and refer to notes. Tailor-made for long writing projects, Scrivener is the go-to app for writers of all types. Scrivener combines a typewriter, binder, and corkboard in a single app. A project outline makes it easy to get an overview of your work and flip between sections. Refer to research alongside your writing and just drag and drop to rearrange your work. Write in any order in sections as large or small as you like and let Scrivener stitch it all together when you're ready to share your words with the world. With Scrivener, you'll find everything you need to start writing and keep writing. Scrivener is available for Mac, Windows, iPad, and iPhone. Download the free trial from ScrivenerApp.com. Right now with Scrivener, listeners can get a 20% discount with the coupon code PODCAST. That's ScrivenerApp.com. So did you visit Sequoia National Park to immerse yourself in this environment?
You know, I did not, and I'll tell you why. I had planned to make the trip and wanted to go on the trip, but guess what stopped me from making the trip?
COVID.
And fire.
And fire, yeah, okay.
Yes, I was willing to risk the trip, you know, during COVID, but fire kind of thwarted the trip that I had, and it's the very thing that I was writing about, so it was just just so eerie, you know, that that was the thing that kind of helped stop the trip. I do plan on making the trip, but the good thing is writing today versus writing 20 years ago, there was so much material. Certainly research with books, that's the first thing. There's a lot that's written on the giant sequoia, on trees, etc. But the second thing is the National Park Service. They were outstanding from the beginning. I got in touch with them. They have an outreach officer that I spoke with, and she was my main interface. But I was able to talk to people that worked there in the park that have experience in the fire service, the firefighters themselves. So it was just, I could not have asked for a better research team to kind of help me craft this book. And then the other thing is videos, YouTube. There are a ton of videos out there, people just driving through, you know, the park or walking through. And I was able to listen. It's like so many times I'm just sitting there for an hour listening. Like, what do I hear? Just, you know, the insects, the wind, you know, chatter, the distant roar of something going on, you know, with the car or who knows, whatever. But between those sources, I felt like I was there. Now, nothing is going to be like going when I finally get the chance and put my hand on, well, you're not really supposed to get that close. But just being very close to Sequoia is something that is still on my bucket list and plan to do.
I assume you've walked around forests in South Carolina. I know they're not the same. I've been to South Carolina a lot. They're agricultural forests, so they're not very natural, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There are several here. We have several state parks. You know, there's Paris Mountain State Park. And I was in North Carolina, actually, for the last 5-6 years. So they also have many state parks, many forests, and you are spot on. I spent so much time, because it's just my happy place. I spend so much time walking through parks, visiting those parks, driving through, kind of just sitting there being. Again, you just kind of absorb it when you're in that space, and all of that channeled into the novel.
What do they call that now? Forest bathing. There's a Japanese word for that.
Yes.
Going into a forest and breathing in the oxygen and the smells and all that. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you later, but there's some small forests near me, and there's a charity trying to rebuild a big forest. I'm in the West Midlands of England, and they're trying to buy up old plots of land and make them join together to build a forest, and it's quite fascinating.
That's awesome. And yeah, there's actually scientific research now that supports the importance of us spending time in the forest, spending time in nature, and the benefits to us, you know, physically, certainly, but also mentally.
Were you inspired by any other fiction about forests? There have been a couple novels, notably Richard Powers' novel, The Overstory.
Definitely Richard Powers. The Overstory was one. Another one, and it's not necessarily forestry, but just an ecological novel, Jeff Vandermeer's Annihilation, you know, that series. Those were two. And then the rest of them were research books just about trees and about the sequoia, nonfiction research that I did. But those two definitely played heavily. And the trick is to read them during the research process before you start to write a word. So that way you have enough of a distance between another author's thoughts and another author's way of telling a story and your own, so that you're not subconsciously filtering in some of that into your own work. So my trick generally is to, if I'm writing and working on something, I might still be reading, but I'm reading in a different genre, or I'm reading some nonfiction in another space, preparing for the next book, those types of things.
Okay, I want to talk about how you use Scrivener, but I'm a little bit worried because on your website it says that you eschew rollerballs for fountain pens and fine paper. And I don't think Scrivener works very well with handwritten documents, does it?
It does not, unfortunately. Hopefully that will be in the next release. We'll talk about
that.
But yes, I tend to like to write longhand. There is something about that process in just a general gel pen or a rollerball just isn't going to do the trick. But there's something about the physical process of putting the pen to the paper that turns on a different switch in my brain for writing. But all of my organization and all of that writing that I do by hand goes right into Scrivener as soon as I'm done, like with each chapter. I make great use of, I've written every single one of my books, the last four books, using Scrivener. Before that, I used an open source tool called LibreOffice. And that was great. It kind of did the job, but it didn't have all of the functionality of Scrivener. What I love about the program is I've basically never found anything that matched everything that I need in a writing tool. In terms of software. But, you know, being able to organize my research and have it at hand is critical. Being able to label and color code my chapters, because I often write from multiple points of view. So being able to color code those and add labels so that then I can then look at the outliner and say, oh, I've spent too much time with this point of view. I need to jump over and spend some time with this other character. Just those types of things are invaluable to me. And there's so much research and so much data that goes into my work that it has to be organized. I have what I call the vault in my binder. And in that vault, I'll have information about certain things about maybe ecology, things about, you know, the roles of firefighters and wildland firefighters and what they do and what their job is like. What type of equipment do they use? All of that research, all of those notes that I take by hand generally end up in Scrivener. So that I can easily access them, particularly when I'm going through the editing process.
So talking about longhand, two questions. The first one is just reacting to what you said. You make notes by hand. I write for the Scrivener blog, and I wrote an article a few weeks ago about using handwritten documents in Scrivener, about how you can just scan them and drop them into your Scrivener project. Is that what you do?
I do that sometimes, but a lot of times I end up typing them in because my handwriting can get a little, especially when I'm excited about something, it gets a little scribbly and I can't make it out. So if I don't translate it right away, if I come back 2 days later, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Yeah.
So I do make use of that, but I also make really good use of like the feature where you can bring in a web page and have that stored in my research vault as well. I do that quite a bit. I even print out PDFs and I'll drop them in there as well. And it just takes everything that I throw at it. You know, the images, it's like I've got images of trees, images of people even, images of equipment and insects. So everything that I toss in, from images to my handwritten notes to PDFs to web pages, it's all right there. And I can access it and pull it up at any time where I'm writing a scene and I'm like, oh, what is it that firefighters use again? It's right there. So it's beautiful.
So when you write your chapters in longhand, do you write an entire chapter, then type it up? Or do you write a chapter and put it aside for a while before you type it up?
No, I generally try to write it and then type it up either the next day or that evening. And the benefit of that is I get a first round edit while I'm doing that, right? So I've written it and it's a bunch of nonsense usually. But by the time I start typing it back in, I'm making some little changes on the fly. I'm making it sound a little better. And so in that way, I finish with what is kind of like a first draft and maybe a little bit of a second draft at the same time.
Right. So that gives you a shortcut because you've done the initial thinking and the typing is also the editing and the rephrasing and reorganizing. So that's an interesting process, especially if you do one chapter at a time, because you're always going to be using that two parts of the brain. Because I tend to feel that the creative part is, I don't want to say left and right brain, I don't necessarily believe in that, but one part of the brain. And the editing is another part of the brain. And when you put them together and then go back to do a new chapter, you're using all the brain. You're using a lot of your brain.
Absolutely. You're using the entirety of the brain, I like to say. And then the good thing as well is that kind of helps prepare me for the next day's writing as well, because it's doubly in my head. And that way I can, when I sit down to write again, it's kind of cemented so that I know where I want to go the next day. And if I'm really feeling good about it, I might, you know, kick off a few sentences at least. And I think I got that from, I can't remember which writer it was that said that. They're like, write a few sentences and then stop. A place that you feel really good about, and so it's easier to come back to the next day.
I had this discussion with someone recently on the podcast about authors who worked like that. I believe it was Anthony Trollope, who worked for the British Post Office, and he would write 2 hours every morning, and he would stop even if it was in the middle of the sentence.
Yeah.
Some other people will say, write the first sentence of the next chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And that way it's primed something in your subconscious. I guess everyone develops a routine for it. Now, you have a full-time job. So when do you write? Do you write in the mornings, the evenings, the weekends?
Yeah, it's a tough thing, I will tell you. Just trying to, because writing's a full-time job. Marketing is now becoming a full-time job
yeah.
for writers. Not something that our dear friend, Mr. Delaney, had to deal with.
No. Nope.
So I write generally in the morning. I'll get up and try to get in at least an hour and a half, maybe two in the morning before work. And then particularly if I'm on deadline, I'll write for another hour and a half or so in the evening. And then definitely Saturdays, that's my power through it day. I can generally get in 4 hours or so on Saturday. And if I'm in a rough spot, I'll do some more on Sunday. So it's a tough slog, but it's one that I enjoy. I love writing more than anything else.
So you're published by 47 North, which is an imprint of Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen? And how does that work being published by Amazon? Because it seems to me that the one problem with that is your books aren't in normal bookstores. They're only available on Amazon, correct?
Yes and no. So my books are available in bookstores, and they have been in bookstores. I've done events with a ton of bookstores. I've been at Baldwin in New Orleans. I've been with Mahogany up in D.C. I did an event for the Foreign Exchange with M. Judson here in Greenville, South Carolina. So, yes, they will carry you.
So they do have print editions as well.
Absolutely. We do have print editions as well.
Okay.
The way that came about was just the regular process with my agent. We got the query together. We got the book done. And this was Bacchanal. And then we kind of went out on submission. There were several publishers that came back with interest. But, you know, this isn't a quick process. 47 North came back quickly with interest and then quickly with an offer. So my choice was to wait for publisher number 2 and 3 that seemed like they were interested, seemed like they were going to come to the table, or go with the offer that was in hand. And I had the same concern as you. I'm like, well, what about my book? Is it not going to be in a store? And long story short, I just came to the conclusion that I wanted my book published. They had an offer. I talked to other people who had published with them and had good success and a good experience, and I went for it, and I have not looked back.
So you get extra visibility on Amazon because it's Amazon's imprint.
Absolutely.
I notice when I look on, even on Amazon UK, look at the reviews from your book, you have thousands of reviews for each one, whereas many authors have 100, if at most.
Absolutely. That the people, what I have found is the people who are Kindle readers, they are rabid readers. And they will show up and show out every single time. It's frankly amazing. The amount of readers that they've curated who are very dedicated to reading on that platform, in addition to Audible. People love audiobooks now. So they've got a bit of a real upside there in that they've curated a list of people who love to read, unlike any independent bookstore probably could. But again, the good thing is I've had independent bookstores that don't have any issue with that. I'm an author, okay? I write books. I don't have anything to do with corporate stuff or any battles between any publishing companies. I'm not interested in it. And I don't think authors should be punished or looked upon in a different way because of whatever those corporate interests are. So I've been lucky to have bookstores that see me as just an author writing a good book, and they're willing to take it on and support.
Okay, I like to ask my guests if they have a book that they can recommend, something that you really love or something that you've read recently. What do you think our listeners would like?
It's weird because it's in the mystery space, but I just finished Tracy Clark. I am reading Hyde right now. It's a Harriet Foster novel. She's a detective. There's two books in the series, and the first one is escaping me. But if you look it up, Tracy Clark, the second one is called Hyde. I read the first one, and I'm partway through the second one now. Outstanding.
Okay, Veronica G. Henry, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Kirk.
If you like the podcast, please follow it in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. To learn more about Scrivener, go to scrivenerapp.com. Join us next month for another conversation on Right Now with Scrivener.